Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. And for this edition, we're putting the spotlight on efforts to legalize doctor-assisted suicide here in Illinois. Dr. Ben German addressed the issue of assisted suicide and euthanasia during a special Illinois Family Institute forum held at Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. German is an internist practicing primary care in the Lawndale community on Chicago's west side, and he is an Illinois representative with the American Academy of Medical Ethics, a biomedical arm of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. During this segment of Spotlight, we'll play an audio portion of a video Dr. German presented during the IFI forum. It was produced by the Canadian Broadcasting System.
I would expect you're here with some expectation that this topic you're interested in, or at least curious to learn more about, the topic of assisted suicide, of euthanasia, and how it might have impact for you as an Illinois citizen. I will actually start with a quote from Mark Twain. He said, "How hard it is that we have to die. A strange complaint to come from the mouths of people who've had to live." He had a rather sarcastic sense of humor, but life can be hard, and we all would hope to, despite the hardness of it, I think, see it through to the end and see it through in some sort of a noble way, to approach it not out of fear, but with some sense of confidence. I think as human beings, we all share this desire to have a good death. You know, hopefully involves a sense of courage, of peace, of fortitude, and for us as Christians, a sense of hope. But I think we can relate to even people who don't have a Christian background that we all would hope to have a good death. The question that remains relevant to this issue is, are there any lines that we shouldn't cross to achieve that good death? Are there any limits that we ought to acknowledge and not go past to find an end that's good? I will acknowledge that I'm a Christian of the evangelical Protestant tradition, and that's what really undergirds my understanding of this issue and how I approach it. A little more universally appeal to even people who don't come from a Christian background. You know, we believe that all truth is God's truth, and so fundamental truths like human dignity and people made in the image of God, truths like the fact that we need boundaries and barriers to kind of hold back human sinful tendencies, these are things that we can agree with people outside of Christianity. So I will appeal to arguments that aren't strictly from the Bible, but are really, I think, based in God's truth that he's made the world in a certain way. I think there's a huge issue that looms as central in this issue of assisted suicide and euthanasia, and that's the issue of personal autonomy. I think we all would agree that God's made us all with the right to choose good, to choose evil, and we want to uphold that, hold personal autonomy highly. But on this issue, there's a tendency to trend towards what I would call radicalized autonomy. That is, autonomy at all costs. Autonomy up and against and greater than any other good that we might seek. And interestingly, in this issue, Oregon, the first state to legalize assisted suicide back in 1994, they set up every year a polling of the people who would request a drug to take their life. And through the statistics that come out every year, the number one reason why people choose assisted suicide is they feel like they've lost that sense of personal autonomy. 92% of patients reported that. I'd like to show, again, help introduce this issue, a video of a woman named Jeanette Loden. She is a Canadian, and this video was, I think, filmed in the last couple of years. And she's just giving a very intimate picture of her journey, ultimately choosing euthanasia.
It's the night before Jeanette Loden's medically assisted death. She asked her family to decorate the lid of her coffin.
Okay, once you do your hand.
The 87-year-old Saskatoon artist has allowed CBC News nearly unrestricted access to the final moments of her life and her death. We meet Jeanette and her daughter Phyllis several weeks before Jeanette is scheduled to die. She's eager to reminisce about her life and explain her reasons to end it.
I thought, you know, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this. It was too painful. Everything was hurting. I was hurting all over. I couldn't do anything. And that's when Phyllis supported me in making that decision that I need to go home.
You know, once she decided that she wanted to go the maid route, that she could see an end in sight, it completely changed her outlook. I mean, changing your outlook on life when you're, you know, when you've got 6 weeks to go, it might sound like an odd thing to do, but she was so happy.
I've had enough. I've had a long life. I'm 87 years old. I've had a wonderful family who support me, and I love dearly forever, and I'll be looking down on them and smiling and telling them I love them.
Jeanette's family has come to accept her decision and is grateful for the opportunity to be part of it.
I'm going to read the poem. Relax back, beloved one, into the timeless presence from which shine stardust and storms and love and light. Rest, beloved one, in the mystery that is your source.
Everybody thinks I'm brave, but I'm actually relieved that I don't have to suffer.
The day has finally come.
Okay, so this is what's going to happen. The doctor's going to come in about half an hour. He's going to talk to Grandma alone for a little while, he's got to get final consent, and by law he has to make sure that nobody is making her do this. So he's going to come in, he's going to talk to her, and then he's going to put an IV in. Then it'll be time for us to all say goodbye to her.
You're the only one who can tell me if today is the day.
Yeah, today is the day.
Today is the day for sure.
Yeah, for positive.
The first step, Dr. Weiler inserts the empty IV line.
Put this down.
As he prepares the fatal medication in the kitchen, it's time for Jeanette to say her final goodbyes.
I love you so much, and I'll miss your presence, your physical presence, but I'll be watching over you and sending all my love and smiling down on you proudly until now. And then I'll love you forever from the other place, from the other realm.
It was such a wonderful ending. You know, in my mind, it was a beautiful death.
Well, we can't help to feel great emotion, and rightly so. Some of you may be feeling this woman's life had a sense of beauty, and even to the end, a sense of beauty in her death. After all, she was able to end it on her own terms, end it with family all around and prepared, so to speak. Others may feel that her means of death seems a bit strange, maybe even macabre. For me as a doctor, seeing a fellow doctor walk into the room of a tearing family and a stoic patient, to know that those tears and that stoicism would be brought by her impending death, and to know that the death would be coming at that doctor's own hand. That gives me chills. Makes me shudder. What if this woman's situation were different? After all, she was surrounded by loving family to the end. But what if instead of that, she was surrounded by family that in no uncertain terms might prefer her to not be with them anymore, to be free of the burden? What if they'd expressed this in no uncertain terms? What if instead of being able to reflect on the beauty and the meaning of her life at the end, maybe her thoughts were clouded by discouragement, disappointment, emotional suffering? What if she really wasn't in terrible pain, but just couldn't find another way to deal with her end in a dignified way in her mind? What if she received from health insurance companies subversive messaging that while interventions that might treat her condition were exorbitantly costly, a medication to take her life would be much more within reach? These are all scenarios that come into play in real-life situations with assisted suicide and euthanasia.
Dr. Ben German, during an Illinois Family Institute forum on assisted suicide hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove, will continue with the next part of his presentation after this.
With a one-minute look at culture from a Christian worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point.
For a lot of people, writes Angela Chen in The Atlantic, sibling bonds are the longest relationship of our lives. We know siblings before we meet our partners and before we have our own kids, and we know them after our parents die. Some research even suggests that siblings have a higher impact than parents on whether a teen does alcohol or drugs. Another study found that subjects who had conflict or distance in their relationships with siblings before age 20 were more likely to be depressed at age 50. What G.K. Chesterton once wrote about neighbors also describes siblings. Quote, "We make our friends, we make our enemies, but God makes our next door neighbor. Hence he comes to us clad in all the careless terrors of nature. He's as strange as the stars, as reckless and indifferent as the rain." End quote. And of course, the fewer children that Western couples have, the fewer siblings will be in the world. And that will be a poorer world indeed. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point.
Joining Illinois Family Spotlight in this segment, Dr. Ben German will outline terms, the history, and arguments against assisted suicide. He made his remarks during an Illinois Family Institute forum held at Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove.
So I want to go over a few definitions just to be clear about what we're talking about. So physician-assisted suicide, or as I'll refer to it now, PAS, that's physician participation by providing the medication but not administering it directly for the purpose of the patient's life ending. Other terms that you may hear as this topic is brought to the forefront in Illinois is a term, medical aid in dying, or MAID, probably the most popular alternative for the people who support PAS. There's also physician aid in dying. Even some would call it simply death with dignity. I would argue the reason these are chosen over PAS is because it sounds a lot better. It's a lot more agreeable to talk about aiding a patient in dying. Who wouldn't want that? That's what doctors are here for. I would recommend using PAS because I think it clearly articulates what's going on in a more authentic way. I would encourage you, if you do feel persuaded that PAS is a bad idea, not to get bogged down as you talk with folks in the details of definition as the end in itself. Like, the main point is that you're engaging on the ideas, and you know, if you can't agree on calling it MAID or PAS, well, the main idea is that they see the problems with it. But nonetheless, I would suggest PAS as the best term to use. Akin to that, euthanasia is where the doctor actually administers the medication. So there's not the same sort of removal of the situation that takes place in PAS, but they're very closely linked. Important other terms to keep in mind, which any healthcare provider should be in support of, are palliative care. So the idea of that is aimed at relieving suffering for those who are suffering from a serious health condition. It may not even be terminal. It may be severe chronic back pain that palliative care can still help treat their pain. And then there's hospice care, which is a type of palliative care or under the umbrella, but it's aimed for patients who really are at the end of their lives, the best we can tell, with prognosis of 6 months or left to live. And so those are some terms to kind of help us navigate this discussion. A little bit of history. I actually was a history major in undergrad, so I love history. So if you all don't, bear with me, but I think it helps inform the discussion. Going back way to the ancient Greeks, we know Socrates ended his life on his own terms. He took the poison hemlock. Plato, his disciple, was in favor, and it was not out of step in the Greek era, in the Hellenistic era, to be in support of if folks were nearing the end to advocate that even a doctor could administer medication to end their life. But juxtaposed against this, we have a gentleman named Hippocrates, who is famed in medical lore because of his oath that even to this day, in some variations, health practitioners often go through in their kind of intro to their courses. But he said, one of his quotes from the original oath, or our translation, he said, "I will give no deadly medicine to anyone if asked, nor suggest any such counsel." So the idea being, it was outside the realm of medicine to intentionally take someone's life, even if it were, so to speak, in their interest. Fast forwarding way on to the 20th century, we're going to set our sights on the country of the Netherlands. We know has been a country for many years that has prioritized autonomy in very significant ways. 1973, there was a doctor named Gertrude Potsma. I'm sure that's not actually how you say it, but that's my best estimate. But her goal was, or not her goal, but what she did was administer medication to end her own ailing mother's life when it seemed that there was no better way to end in sight. She was convicted, actually, by the courts in the Netherlands for mercy killing, a law that, or a violation that was punishable by up to 12 years in prison. But the courts made a landmark decision instead to give her a 1 week time in jail and one year suspension or probation. It was so significant because it set up a new era in the Netherlands that no longer was euthanasia, PAS, going to be posed in any significant way by the law. It kind of opened up what became the floodgates to PAS and euthanasia. So the government in 1990 established an investigation to see, hey, what's the damage that was actually done or what's been the outcome? What they found was that there were 2,300 instances in 1990 alone of euthanasia PAS. And in a country the size of the Netherlands, only maybe 15 million then, if you apply that to the U.S. today, we're talking about 30-35-fold of that number. So a huge increase, and nothing was being done about it. And so legislation did legalize it later thereon. And since then, it's not just legal for patients who have a serious terminal illness. Even that early, but certainly into today, studies would show that not a small number of patients are choosing euthanasia or because of a primary psychiatric condition. We're talking about major depressive disorder, bipolar, right? Patients that aren't of sound judgment are being allowed to take their lives in the Netherlands. Well, you know, that's Europe. We all know that's not us and probably not quite where we are today anyway. But Canada, as was alluded earlier, has seen an even greater escalation of this issue. It was only legalized in 2016, a mere 8 years ago. And then 2021, new legislation opened up the door, not just for folks with terminal conditions, but folks with no foreseeable end in sight could choose PAS or euthanasia. If we look at the way it's grown, 2016, only 1,000 people or so, not a small number considering Canada's size, chose to use this law to end their life. But in 2021, tenfold increase, 10,000 people in a five-year span. The most recent data from 2022 that we have, it's increased to 13,000. I mean, you get the idea. This is more than a linear increase year by year. And this year, Canada has also legalized euthanasia for primary mental health conditions. This is stuff that's going fast. This slippery slope is real. In the U.S., Oregon was the first state to legalize PAS, 1994. Since then, there have been 9 more states in Washington, D.C. There's no states in the Midwest right now. I want to actually play another video, but I think somebody from the other side of the equation, somebody who viewed this issue differently.
I fight to live. I fight to have a better life today. It's driving in the neighborhood and seeing kids play outside. It's a privilege that we get to see these things, to experience these things, to smell these things. I think you realize that in a whole new way when you realize that you're sick and you're dying.
I think at first I was kind of in denial. Maybe she wasn't as sick as she said she was, and maybe the doctors were wrong.
You know, when the doctor tells you your wife is gonna die and this is how long she's gonna live, the first thing I think we really did was let's try to figure out how to make this last longer.
She can do everything they tell her to do and die tomorrow. These are diseases, these are conditions that she's going to deal with. And that's just who she is now.
We don't know if tomorrow is going to be another day or if we have 5, 10, 15 more years. I see my daughter going through what she's going through, and she just amazes me. She's my hero. I am so proud of her and how she's handled all of this.
I have scleroderma. It affects my internal organs. It's caused my lungs to start to harden, and it basically turns into scar tissue, so they can't expand, and I can't get the proper amount of air in or out. Chances are my my lungs are going to give out in the middle of the night or after an infection in a hospital somewhere, and my heart will stop.
Not only am I, you know, trying to prolong my life with my wife, but I think it's bringing us closer together, so we're getting more time together as well. So you can't look at it from a negative perspective, or you can't move on with life, you know, and life doesn't just stop for you.
You do your best to keep moving forward no matter what your current circumstances are, because life is important.
This is precious time that we have. We need to wrap ourselves around that and just enjoy it.
I know about SB 128, and I absolutely know why people would consider it. Anybody else who's suicidal, we get them help. We don't hand them a gun. You know, we send them to a doctor, and we help give them the proper tools to deal with whatever circumstance is consuming them. This bill diminishes every single thing that I go through. It takes away from the fight. It makes the bad days worse. It minimizes everything. I know how I hope I'll deal with it, you know, when the time comes, but all we can do is prepare and do our best to carry on with having a life with dignity. There's a lot of honor in that, and there's a lot of privilege in being able to show that for somebody else, because even if my kids aren't sick, they'll see the importance of not giving up. You don't run away from it. You know, you walk through it and you hold the people that you love close and hold hands and go for it.
Important facts to note since this video was filmed. It was released in 2015. Later that year, unfortunately, California did vote to legalize assisted suicide. However, Stephanie, the latest that I have been able to trace her surviving is actually all the way to 2021, and that was the last interview that I could find that she was quoted in. For all I know, she's still alive. How many years after her prognosis was so poor? Also essential to note, Stephanie in other videos notes or shares with us that she had received phone calls after the legalization of PAS in California. Phone calls with an insurance company talking about next steps with treatment. The representative told her the medications to continue treatment were very costly, and we'll have to think about that. However, for less than $2, you could end your life. They didn't tell her that was the best choice. They didn't tell her that was the only option, but they planted that seed in her mind. This is what we call steering, and this is something the laws cannot prevent because it's implicit, right? It's not explicit. They didn't tell her what she had to do, but they planted that seed of doubt in her mind. Well, you can gather from the video, Stephanie is a courageous woman. She didn't have any part of that. So where are we in Illinois today? I'm here before you not because this is some issue that we might have to think about eventually, but because there is active legislation on committee in Illinois to legalize PAS. Senate Bill 3499, thankfully, is still in committee after it was introduced this January, but things move fast in this business. A few things just to share about the bill. It's designed for patients with terminal illness, as defined as within reasonable medical judgment, having 6 months or less to live. The way it's designed, a patient would submit a request to a physician, and that physician would have to get a consulting opinion from another doctor to basically check the boxes, say this patient doesn't seem to be obviously being coerced, seems that they are within that terminal kind of definition. Only 5 days after the initial request can the patient receive the medication to take their life. A 5-day waiting period to me seems far too short. There's no requirement for mental health evaluation aside from just the general doctor visit. They don't have to see a psychiatrist or even consult with a social worker unless there's some concern for cognitive impairment or some kind of impairment in judgment. And these things are very easy to hide, aren't they? A few things to highlight that I'm particularly concerned about and that disability rights groups are concerned about, that concerned healthcare providers in Illinois are concerned about. First of all, there's concern for coercion and breaking down of healthcare conscience protections. while I'm not required under the bill to prescribe the medication myself, I am required to provide a referral to someone who's willing to give it. And more than that, the 5-day window starts with when they see me. Even if I want nothing to do with it, that mere 5 days starts ticking when they first see me in the office. Certainly the great concern with lack of mental health provision to really ensure there's adequate procedure to assess the patient's psychiatric condition is lacking. There are many other things I could say. I think I'll pause right there. I've talked enough.
Dr. Ben German with the Christian Medical and Dental Associations during a special Illinois Family Institute forum on assisted suicide hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Our thanks to Pastor Mark Moore and the Belmont leadership team for allowing us to be there. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. If you'd like to give, go to illinoisfamily.org or call us at 708-781-9328 and sign on for IFI email updates at illinoisfamily.org and go there for information about events. Tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. And until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.